Yeah, everyone probably has to consent to the recording. Okay, so let me say just a few things about the Shiur schedule. Everybody should be preparing the Gemara up to the Mishnah on, I think it's Yud Aleph. Everybody there yet in their Shiur prep, more or less, at the Mishnah on Yud Aleph? So just if you're not there yet, keep working towards the Mishnah on Yud Aleph. I want to finish up the Tztako Sugya. If not by the end of this week, then certainly by the middle of next week to wrap up all the aspects of tzedakah. And then we'll start the Mishnah on Yud Aleph, Ein Chulkin Esach Chatzer, and start preparing. I would say the first sugya, we're going to mention a few things along the way, but you want to get to Yud Beis Mabeis. Okay, just for our first sugya. So that's, we're going to take a nice bite out of that. Those two blot from Yud Aleph until Yud Beis Mem Beis. Everybody good with that plan? Okay. Now, secondly, just a quick question. How many of you are going to be around in June, from let's say June 1st to let's just say June 21st before camp starts? Okay, so who's not going to be around? Okay, Ariel's not around, Daniel's not around, Ned's not around. Eitan's not around. Josh, you're not around.
Not sure yet.
Not sure yet. Benji, you're not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Who might be around? So Romy, Kobe, Ezra, and Benji. Who's definitely going to be around?
I should be around for most of that, but
Okay. Okay. Ned, how about you? I don't think you raised your hand for anything.
I raised my hand. I'm not going to be around.
Oh, you're not around. Okay. Okay, so we'll have to think critically just about what to do. I'm happy to go forward in June just to continue moving into the second parak. If our group is tiny, it might be nice, but we could make an executive decision. I'm good to go forward in June, but let's just get together the people who are possibly being around and make a schedule for what we want to accomplish. Does that sound good? What time would Shir be during Zoom? I don't know, Ariel. But you said you're not around, right?
Awesome. I'm not a real world many expected sure would be always, but I would around so the still.
I don't even know what Ariel said. Can put it into the chat, Ariel, and we'll figure it out. Okay, so we'll figure out the June part of this later on. So let's get started for today. I'm going to share my screen and make this larger. Okay, so today I just want to make, I'm going to start off with two tiny, tiny comments about the last sugya, page 64 of the source sheet. I just want to draw to your attention the Rambam in Matnas Aniyim in Perek Tes Halacha Tes Vav, that when we talk about De Machzoro, it could also refer to a localized need. The example is the person who's traveling. And on his travels, he's in need of something. So he has money at home, but he doesn't have money that's accessible to him. Everybody see this Rambam? It's a very famous din of Sukkah. Did we discuss this at the end of last year? No, I don't think we mentioned this. Let me just mention it very quickly. Balabai shahaya mahalach li'ir. Ma So this din is very sensible. Let's say you have a very rich person. He has all his money tied up in the bank, but while he's traveling, he has no access to cash. So the halacha is that, relatively speaking, or subjectively, given that he doesn't have access to his money, he's considered an ani. Yes? Now that's all fine. That means that poverty or anius or your entitlement to take tzedakah is relativized to your need. Given your circumstances, given your context, you have a need, correct? So that's all fine. That makes a lot of sense, and that's consistent with the de machzoro in a subjective sense. But look at this part. Very fascinating statement that even though this guy is a gvir and has a lot of money at home, we don't require him to reimburse the no sein hatstaka, even though he has plenty of means available to reimburse him. Does everybody see that? It's a really striking view. So the Rambam's taking this idea that contextually, given his travels, given that the guy doesn't have access to his money, he's really an ani. And the analogy is very sharp. We don't say that when an ani becomes rich, he has to reimburse the person who gave him tzedakah all those years, correct? So too, when this rich person comes home, he's not obligated to reimburse the person who gave him tzedakah. So I think that's a very powerful statement of the subjective / contextual de machsoro sense of tzedakah. Thoughts on this, Rambam, quickly? Now, if we want to address the intuition that it seems very strange, okay, does this seem strange to you? Is anybody troubled by it? Shmuel, you're troubled by it?
I mean, I'm not necessarily troubled by it, but I do question why this person who's traveling isn't obligated to sort of bring some sort of wealth along with him.
I mean, okay, let's say it wasn't his fault. Let's say...
In that scenario, then, it bothers me a lot less.
Ah, but you're not bothered by the fact that he doesn't have to reimburse the person who gave him tzedakah?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It seems like something that would be nice to do, but it doesn't bother me that halachically we don't obligate him.
Great. Ned, you have a comment?
Yeah, meaning what would that look like? If he gave the money back, then the person who gave him tzedakah, then they don't get the mitzvah. Retroactively, they don't get the mitzvah.
You're worried about robbing the nosein of the tzedakah of the mitzvah. That's an interesting perspective. The way I would approach this, to the extent that it's so Ned, that's a fine point. I'm not as worried about robbing the nosein of his kiyum mitzvah. I think that's for Hashem to decide. But the way I would, to the extent that anybody's worried about this, Romy, you have a hand?
I mean, you can say what you're going to say first.
Okay. To the extent that anybody's worried about this, I would say the answer really lies in the Rambam's second comment, which is, we don't require an ani who was poor and then became rich to reimburse the tzedakah that gave to him, that he received. Why is that? I think that the simple answer is because he now has a separate chiyuv tzedakah as an ashir to give. So it goes around, comes around. Meaning it's not a duty to reimburse the nosein. The system as a whole works out well because he has chiyuv tzedakah to other aniyim. Right, so fairness in tzedakah doesn't have to be between the nosein and the mekabel. The nosein gave you tzedakah, now you're making it back to him. The point is that overall, the system of tzedakah is there to help out people with needs. An ani shehesh here, he doesn't have a retrospective duty to give back what he received, but he has a prospective obligation to support tzedakah institutions. Same with this ani. With this ashir who was traveling and didn't have needs on the way, obviously when he gets home, he has his own tzedakah obligations. But it's in the nature of tzedakah that it's not a quid pro quo, right? It's not something that has to be given back. Romy, you had a comment on this?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the chiddush is in the, maybe it's not such a chiddush, but if there is a chiddush, it's in the fact that Rambam's calling this tzedakah in the first place. Meaning, once it's tzedakah, of course, you don't have to pay back because that's what tzedakah is. You give it to someone and you don't get paid back, like you said.
I totally agree. It's two things. It's the fact that this is viewed as tzedakah, and B, that it's really dome l'ani shehesheir. I mean, the fact that Dom draws that analogy in the end, l'ani shehesheir, shows that he takes this very seriously as an instance of tzedakah. So I agree with what Romy said. I just want to expand on it by noting that this is a theme we've seen in other places. The idea that tzedakah is very expansive, right? Tzedakah is not just like a duty to the poor. Demachsor is one aspect of that. Chiev Lubanov of Nosava Hagdolim is another dimension of that, correct? Tzedakah has a much richer effect than just this notion of supporting the poor. Josh, you had a comment that went away?
Yeah, I was going to say the Rambam says the same thing by Pidyon Shvuyim because the guy didn't have money, right?
Correct. Yeah, Pidyon Shvuyim and the Rambam statement, there's another example. Okay, one other quick point from the previous shiurim. I just wanted to draw your attention to the Mishnah in Peah Ches and the Tosefta in Peah Dalid Yud. We were talking about Demach Soro, this notion about Tefilu Sus Lirchov Alav, Tefilu Eved L'Shamsho. which might sound, getting back to our analogy about the Porsche, our example of the Porsche, that you have an example to make the guy rich, right, and to give him these lavish luxuries to put him back in the position he was in, correct? So just notice this Mishnah in Peah. It says, when you have somebody who's an ani, so let's say he doesn't have Masayim Zuz, Ein mechayven oso limkor es beis oves klei tashmisha. We don't require him to sell off his house and his utensils. The background of this Mishnah is it's talking about anybody who has Masayim Zuz, let's say that's a year's worth of income, as the Rishonim here explain, is not allowed to take leket shecha peo meiser ani. Okay? He has to have less than that in order to be entitled to tzedaka. But the question is, what do you mean by less than that, right? So is it disposable income or assets worth this amount of money? The Mishnah is very clear that we're not mechayiv him to sell off his house and klei tashmisho. Do you see that? So the question is, what does that mean? That means if I have, let's say, a luxury asset, I'm entitled to be supported by tzedaka, and I'm not obligated to sell it off. That seems a little too radical. So if you look at the Tosefta has a very fascinating qualification. It says in Perek Dalet Halacha Yud of Peah, Haya mishtamesh b'chlei zahav, mochron mishtamesh b'chlei chasef. B'chlei chasef, mochron mishtamesh b'chlei nechoshes. B'chlei nechoshes, mochron mishtamesh b'chlei zechuches. So the thought in the Tosefta is that you're not obligated to sell off your assets such that you're left with nothing, but you are obligated to sell off your luxury things at least a little bit in order to pay for your own sustenance. Right, so it's a very important qualification on the Mishnah and Peah. In the Mishnah, you might think, oh, I'm not obligated to sell off my car to put food on my table. I could get staka before I have to sell off my car. And the Tosefta says that's true, but if you have a fancy car, if you have fancy, if klei zahav, you have to sell that off to support yourself and go down into a weaker type of kelim. So the way I would read the Tosefta is that you do have an obligation to sell off your luxury goods to support yourself. You're just not obligated to sell off your basic kelim or your house. Maybe if you have a fancy house, you have to sell your house to downsize to something more sustainable, but you're not obligated to become homeless or without these basic necessities just to support yourself or food. Thoughts on this, Tosefta? Make sense to you guys? Okay, good. So let's get into the discussion for today. This is the main topic, if you don't have any comments on that Tosefta. So the main discussion that I want to bring up today is two interrelated points. The first point is just generally about how tzedakah is supposed to be given. What's the proper attitude? What's the proper mode of giving tzedakah? Not the amount, not how much tzedakah you give, but in which manner, what should a person's method of giving tzedakah be? That's issue number one. Issue number two, interrelated, is the centrality of the dignity of the ani in the Torah's method of dispersing tzedakah. Or to put it slightly differently, the central claim that I want to substantiate today is that when the Torah prescribes a method of giving tzedakah, its central interest in prescribing that method is to preserve the dignity of the ani as much as possible. Are we in agreement on that general formulation? Now, there are two ways of formulating this. There's a good way and a bad way. I don't want to say a right way and a wrong way because that's too strong, but there's at least a good way and a bad way of formulating this. The bad way is to just say that there are two dinim here. There's a din of tzedakah, and then there's a din of hilchos deos, not embarrassing somebody. Al yalbin pnei chaver barabim. You shouldn't be mevayish your friend. And that what we just have here is the imposition of that general halacha and hilchos deos onto hilchos tzedakah. correct? I shouldn't embarrass you. So one application of not embarrassing you is to not embarrass Anani. That's one way of putting it. But I think the stronger way of putting it is to say that, as we've seen already within Hilchos Tzedakah, that the dignity of the Ani is deemed to be a central concern. Where do we see this? In De Machzoro, for example. The whole argument of the Gaonim is that the reason why you have a duty to support the Ani with a sus and a sus lirchoval of an Eved L'shamsho is to make sure that the Ani is De Machzoro, that he doesn't lose his sense of self-respect. Right? That's one of the things that Tzedakah aims to secure. Not just that he has food, but that the self-respect is a primary good that deserves halachic protection. And therefore, I want to say, when it comes to the method of dispersing tzedakah, the kavod, the dignity, the ensuring that there's no bizayon to the ani looms large and is at the center of those dinim. Does that make sense? Thoughts on that characterization before we look at the mekoros to support it? Rumi?
Can you just repeat those two? I didn't catch the difference again.
Between the two tzedakim?
Yeah, meaning the weaker formulation and the stronger formulation.
The weaker formulation is just to say there's a general halacha of not embarrassing somebody. Al yalbin pnei chaver barabim, al yalbin pnei chavero, as a general hilchos deos issue, but how you should relate to other people. And then that just gets applied within hilchos tzedakah. The second formulation says that one of the main things that tzedakah is supplying to the ani is a sense of dignity and self-respect. Therefore, when the Torah prescribes the rules of giving tzedakah, it's part of your obligation to the ani within Hilchos Tzedakah to ensure that you give it to him in a manner that preserves his dignity and self-respect. So we're not borrowing some general klal from Hilchos Deos, but it's an internal goal of tzedakah itself to provide the ani with this sense of dignity. Everybody good with that formulation? Do you see the difference? Okay. And so you see this, my point is that, so we see this, or we saw this already in terms of the content, in terms of the substance, what's the good, what's the resource that you're giving the ani? Not just food and clothing, but you're giving him that sense of dignity. De machzor asher yachzor lo. And then that also applies within the method of giving tzedakah, the manner in which you're supposed to give it. Thoughts on that? Ned, it's good? Okay. So let's look at the makoros. Whoops. Let's look at the makoros that support this. So let's start here on page 65. I already mentioned the Shit Mekubetzes of De Machzoro that says the reason why you have to support an ani with Filu Eved Laretz Lefanav is so that people don't find out that he became poor. Does this sound familiar? Because that would embarrass him, right? He would suffer some busha through that. So we see that part of the mitzvah of tzedakah is to ensure that he's not suffering that blow to his dignity and self-respect. So that's example number one. Example number two, where we saw this concern of bizayon for the ani, was an argument about Baso Daf Tesamid Aleph in the discussion between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda about Bodkin Lichsus versus Bodkin Limizonos. The argument that one should be bodek limizonos but not for ksus was what? What was the argument that one should be bodek for ksus but not for mizonos? Romy?
That it's one is embarrassing and one is not, meaning to not be clothed is embarrassing.
Exactly. And that seemed to suggest, at least on one reading, that the concern of the bizayon ha'ani features prominently in, you know, whether we'll just give him clothing before we even make an inquiry into whether he is honest or not. A third area where we see this concern for the dignity of the ani is the Gemara in Ksuvos Samech Zayin Amud Aleph. The Braisa starts Yasom v'Yisoma Shebo l'Hisparnes Mefarnesin es Hayisoma v'Achagach Mefarnesin es Hayasom. So you have a male and a female who both need to be supported. And we have to triage. Who are we going to support first? So who does the Gemara in Nivamo Samach Zayin favor for that? Between the Yasam and the Yisoma? Daniel?
You do the Yisoma first.
Why?
Because it's normal for a guy to go door to door to ask, but not for a woman.
Yeah, so what's wrong with the woman? So it's more natural or it's more normal for a man to go from door to door knocking on people's doors, but it's not normal for a woman to do that. And therefore what? Who cares? What's special about that normalcy?
I mean, it's embarrassing, though. It's a lot less dignified for a woman to do it.
Exactly. And you could see actually in the next line in the Gemara, in Samach Zayin and Basin Ksavis, it says, Yasam v'yasoma shabo li nase. So they both need to get married and you have to support one over the other. Because the busha of a woman is greater than that of a man. So I take it that's related to this notion of having to go around begging for tzedakah. And this it's actually not clear if the second line of the Gemara is leaning on that type of consideration or maybe even just not being married. Right, there's greater busha to her than to the yasam if he remains unmarried for longer. It's actually not clear in the Gemara if the busha in both cases is the same. Anybody have a thought on that? And even look at the Rambam's psak here. So Daniel, why don't you just take us through this Rambam, this one liner, Ha'isha Kodamas.
Ha'isha Kodamas le'ish la'achel v'chtos ha'hortik mi'beis ha'shavi.
It's natural, it's derech of an ish to go around asking for tzedakah, and a woman has greater busha. So we see again here in triaging who gets tzedakah first, that busha plays a central role. Right? And I think busha is naturally associated with a lack of dignity. Right? That's why you're humiliated to go around and ask. So this is a third example. Okay. Let's look at a fourth example of where this plays a central role in Staka. We have our Gemara in Bava Basra, Tes Amud Beis. So the Gemara itself is not hugely informative, but somebody want to take us through this Gemara, Hanos in Prutilani. Benji, you want to take a stab at it?
Sure. Hanotin Pritalani, Barak Bashish Brachot, Dichtiva Lo Pirish Fukule, Vanim, Marudin Tami Bae, Ki Tire, Arum Bafule. And with Pius Bidvarim, with Barak Bachas al Brachot.
Shnamar Vitil. So what does that mean? So what does that mean, Miss Pius Bidvarim, Miss Barak Bachas, Bachas Rei Brachos?
Meaning that, like, if you just give money to an Ani, then, like, yeah, you get six Brachos and it's, like, a good thing. But if you give, we translated this as, like, words of encouragement. If you satisfy him with words, then you get 11 brachas.
Exactly.
Like even more.
That's exactly right. The Gemara here seems to weigh the value of financially supporting the Ani with the value of giving him encouragement, or chizuk in its most basic sense, verbal support, encouragement, camaraderie. And Benji, which does the Gemara think is more valuable between the two, seemingly?
The advice for the bar, the encouragement.
Exactly. And it sounds like that's even if you're not giving him any money. And let's see some formulations of this when this gets paskin. So let's look at the tour, for example. Kasher yitznena, when you give tzedaka, yitenosa b'sever panem yafos, b'simcha v'tuv levav, umis one nim ha'ani b'tzaro, umidaber lo divrei tanchumim v'nechamos. Right, so just, you see an integral component to tzedakah is that you give it to the Ani with this positive sense of encouragement, right, raising his spirits, which might even loom larger than the actual giving. Did you guys look at the Rambam's different levels of tzedakah? And so what did you notice there about this aspect of... Let's see if we can pull it up for a second. Yeah, you could see the last two levels in the Rambam seem to prioritize giving less with sefer panim yafos, maybe even words of encouragement, than giving more in a manner that is like, okay, fine, take my money, right? So the supporting the ani psychologically seems to loom larger in Chazal's characterization of tzedakah than the amount of tzedakah that's given to him. Okay. So let's just go back to where we were, and you could take us, Benji. You could see, yeah, just look at this one line of the Maaser Rokeach characterizing the tourist position. Shenosin la'ani b'panim zo'afos. Take it away, Benji.
Hatam shani shenotin la'ani b'panim zo'afos. V'ro degriya tfei v'vayish p'nei ha'ani.
Right.
That here where you do it in like this, like disgusting, fine here, like peasant, take it. That's even worse because you're like embarrassing the ani.
Yeah.
So I guess it's worse than like not giving anything at all.
That's right.
That's what it's talking about.
That's right. So I think this makes sense, right? If you think that, so the question is, how do you make sense of the fact that being mefayis the ani with words of encouragement could have more value than actually giving him financial support, correct? But if you think that the dignity of the ani and giving him a sense of self-respect looms large in the midst of tzedakah, arguably you could fulfill that dimension through divrei pius and divrei nechama even without giving him any financial support. Anybody have thoughts on that? Josh, how does that sound to you?
Yeah, good.
Sounds good. Okay, Shmuel?
Yeah, so it's a nice idea, but everything we're saying about like giving encouragement comes in the context of giving. Can you really totally separate them out and say just simply by giving encouragement without a penny of financial support that you've accomplished the mitzvah of tzedakah? It seems, according to the way we've been raising it, exclusively in the context of giving, that's difficult.
Interesting. So you want to say that mefaisa b'dvarim isparach b'chasei bracha has to be limited to a case where you're actually giving?
I mean, just unless I see a source that says straight out, like the Chiddush, that you just simply by saying nice words to the guy, right, you've accomplished this mitzvah of tzedakah, it seems pretty difficult to say that they're totally, totally independent.
So Shmuel, do you want to say no tzedakah without giving? That's what you want to say. Okay, so one second. Correct. So I'm going to come back to that, but at least you should concede the point that we definitely get from this Gemara that somebody who gives less, bipanim yafos, v'divrei tanchumim upius, is doing a greater mitzvah than somebody who gives more, bipanim zoafos.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think like the psychological effects can sort of be bought. Like if I'm giving $10 with like a mean face versus $1 million with like, sorry, $1 million with a mean face versus $10 with a nice face, like I feel like the guy will still feel pretty good taking $1 million. But yes, I agree. There's a pretty big fetish here.
I don't know. I'm actually not sure. I think there's ways where you could give the ani a lot of nice things where if you make him feel, you can make him feel like a loser. No, I mean, I wouldn't underestimate the power of this dimension of kavod. I don't know. Anybody ever have that experience? Anybody ever have this experience where somebody gives you something, but you feel like a total like reject or like a total loser for having to accept it? No?
It depends how much they're giving.
Really?
I mean, if he's going to bully me for the rest of my life because he gave me $1 million, then that's probably not a worthwhile cause. But if he's going to like look down upon me for like a minute and I end up with $1 million in my bank account, this right, isn't really like a meaningful.
You never had somebody do you a favor, but they just like so nasty about it that you'd rather not have asked them, even if the favor was a big deal? Anybody ever have that experience. Romy seems to have that experience. Care to share?
I wasn't thinking of something particular. I just kind of feel like, oh, I get that
feeling. Yeah, like I'll never ask that guy for a favor again.
Yeah.
Right. I think there's but you can imagine all the more so with the Ani, where there's more on the line. Let me just look here at the Meiri's formulation. Okay, we'll get to the Meiri soon. I want to talk about it. Okay, but Shmuel, your point is well taken. We want to know if there, whether Pius Bidvarim could ever rise to the level of Tztaka without any Mais and Nesina. So we'll come back to that. I want to add to this discussion, the Gemara in Chagiga Hemet Aleph, darshening the Pasuk in Koheles, Yid Bez Yid Dalid. Kies kol ma'aseh. So you're going to be adjudicated for all your actions, whether they're good or bad. So the Gemara here in its context wants to know what does that mean that you'll be judged for the good and the bad? So we're taught, Amri debe Rabbi Yanai, ze hanosein staka la'ani befarhesya. So somebody who's going to be judged for imtov imra is somebody who gives staka to an ani in public. And what does the Gemara say? Did anybody get a chance to see Chagiga Hey Med Aleph? This was a late addition to the source sheet. So the Gemara says, Ki hadra Rav Yanai, chaze lehu gavra dekayav zuzul anim farhes. Rav Yanai saw somebody giving tzedaka to an ani in public. So in public view, everybody could see this happening. Amar le mutav delo yavis le mehashta diyavis le vikisafte. Better that you not give it to him at all than give it to him and embarrass him. So Shmuel, I guess Shmuel would say, well, if there was enough money there, then, you know, better that you give it before Hesia, right? But here in the Gemara, you get the statement that the embarrassing him totally undercuts the mitzvah of tzedakah. I think that makes sense from the perspective of the dignity of the ani lying at the center of the mitzvah. Okay. A version of this idea of tzedakah being done in private so as not to undermine the kavod of the ani appears in our sugya, but about to test some of these. Somebody want to tell us what's going on here? Gadol oset tzedakah b'seiser yoser mimoshe rabbeinu. So the best way to do tzedakah is to do it in private, b'seiser, Ned.
I would read it.
You don't have to take us through the whole Gemara, but tell us what's the main point here?
That sort of divine wrath is a function of how you give tzedakah.
Yeah, I guess that is the main point here. It's a little too theological for us. But yeah, the point is that tzedakah saved... Matan Tztaka B'Seser could save people in a way that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to save himself or Klal Yisrael. So Tztaka B'Seser has this greater schus. And you could see this gets paskined in the tour, for example. So let's see, Resh Mem Tes. Ned, take us through this. V'yitznenelo B'Seser. Yeah, so again, you see this notion about the ani not being embarrassed. I'm curious, just to, in a way of testing my initial chakira, about whether this is Hilchos Deos just getting applied to tzedakah, or whether this is internal to the essence of tzedakah. It'll be an interesting exercise to figure out if this type of busha would even rise to the level of a Hilchos Deos wrongdoing. And like when you think of Al Yalbin Pnei Chaver Rabin, usually you think of something like, I don't know, saying something mean about somebody, exposing a secret about them. This seems to be less about doing something that disgraces the person and more that you're doing something that's just not consistent with upholding their dignity. Would you guys agree to that distinction? It's so quiet. Kobe, would you agree to that distinction?
I was about to ask, can you say it one more time?
Sure. I'm just wondering if this type of busha would be the type that you would normally think is prohibited under, let's say, Hilchos Deos type considerations. What are you doing here? You're helping somebody out. You're giving them money to support themselves. Is that embarrassing somebody in public? One might think that there's no wrongdoing in terms of the standard of not embarrassing somebody in public, but it is still inconsistent with giving the ani a dignified way of living. So I just think we should keep our eyes open for a distinction between the standard of busha that's relevant for Hilchos Tzedaka as possibly distinct from the standard of busha that would trigger wrongdoing in Hilchos Deos. Somebody see that suggestion at least? Yeah. Josh, you have a comment?
Yeah, just a quick question. There are some forms of tzedakah where there would be no busha, right? Like if donating money to YU's Rise Up campaign is considered tzedakah, I don't think it'd be like embarrassing to YU if you publicized that you gave them money. So there you would say that there's no reason to do it in secret.
Yeah, that's right. But that's not, yeah. You're not giving to an ani there, right? There you're, right. So there's no person involved. So there's no dignity. I don't know if corporate nonprofit institutions have a notion of busha and dignity. Right. Like, what does it mean for YU to be embarrassed even? So there's just a category mistake. Yeah. Okay. So let's look at the Gemara Baba Basra Daf Yud Amid Aleph. Let me just add this note here because I think this is worth looking into. Okay. So let's take a look at Baba Basra Daf Yud Amid Aleph. Here we get also a strong statement on the type of privacy that Tzedaka attempts to ensure. Eitan Jesselson, do you want to take us through Baba Basra Yenamad Aleph? Did you prepare it?
Should I read it or just go through it?
Yeah, read this. Here, let's see. Ezuhi Shematzilasa Misa Mishuna. What's this special type of tzedakah that has this power to save you?
Notna ve'no yodeh lemi notna. So you give, but you don't know to whom you give. Notna ve'no yodeh lemi notna. And then you take, but you don't know from whom you took.
So that's the high. That's this level of tzedakah that will save you from misa mishuna, right? Tzedakah tatzlin maves. So there are two features of it. What are the two features, Eitan?
Yeah, so you give, but you don't know to whom you give, or you take, and you don't know from whom you took.
Yeah, so the receiver doesn't know who he's getting from, and the giver doesn't know to whom he's giving, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Gemara just flashes it out a little bit, contrasts it with two cases. Tell us the contrasting cases.
Yeah, so this notna ve'no yodeh lemi notna, so the kukei midbar rukva notna ve'no yodeh lemi notna, so... Yeah, what we just said before, that it has to do with giving and not knowing to whom you give or taking and not knowing from whom you give.
So what's the case of Marukva, which was not as good? That was a case where, what did Marukva do? Marukva used to go around and...
For Zeus.
What's this case? He knew of a certain ani and he would put in some tzedaka through his door, correct?
Yep.
Okay. He would wake up early in the morning. He would put some tzedakah through the ani's door. Anybody remember what happened there? Gemara in Ksivis Samach Zayin. Rashi quotes it. Marukva hava shadi l'aniya dishvivuse kol yom arba zuzi b'tzinur d'dasha. Harisha ani eni yodeh minot. Lav hu yodeh l'minos. Now, so Marukva used to... It was like Tomche Shabbos. Right, Tomche Shabbos, they just drop off a packet at your door. I guess there the ani knows who he's getting from, not an individual, but from the organization. So anytime you drop something off at your door, at someone's door, obviously the giver knows to whom he's giving. Yes? So that is not considered to be ideal tzedaka. Correct, Eitan? So Eitan, why is that? What's wrong with that?
The giver knows who he's giving to.
And what's wrong with that?
I mean,
who cares? Who cares if the giver knows to whom he's giving?
Then it can be embarrassing for the poor person if the poor person knows that the giver knows He's giving it to him.
So it's embarrassing for the poor person because the poor person knows that the giver knows that he's poor. That's the idea?
I think so.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that would rise to the level of, you know, Malbin Pnei Chavero in Hilchos Deos? Like you're embarrassing somebody by secretively supporting them? Like you're certainly not embarrassing them before anybody else. Correct?
Yeah.
You're not humiliating them in front of anybody. Correct? It's actually an interesting question. Is Al Yalbin Pnei Chavero only Barabim? Or is it even if it's in private? But here it seems like even though you're not embarrassing him in public at all, it's the mere fact that he knows that he's being supported that's non-ideal tzedakah. Correct? So I think this would be a good example where you could detangle the special concerns of tzedakah from what would be the types of concerns of Hilchos Deos. Now, the fact that we don't even want the Ani himself to know that there's somebody out there who knows that he needs to be supported. Okay. What's the next case? What's the case of Lafuke Midrabiaba? Eitan?
Oh,
See, Rashi here tells us in Daf Yudam Beis.
Yeah, I mean, here, not really sure when he does something behind his back. Really.
Yeah, anybody want to help out, Eitan? Oh, is the Rabbi Abba type of tzedaka?
He would tie something to a string and throw it behind him so that nobody could see what, meaning so he couldn't see who was picking it up or something.
Yeah, he would let's say, you know, he would tie this sudar behind his back. Let's say he'd wear a knapsack, put coins in the outside pocket, and let Anim come and pickpocket him, you know, take from the kupa as he walked around. Okay? So what level of tzedakah is that? It's Yodea Miminot Love and Yodea Minosna. He didn't know who was taking tzedakah from him. The backpack was behind him. But the Aniyim knew from whom they were receiving it. Now that's what's wrong with knowing that you're from whom you're receiving the tzedakah if they don't know that you're the one taking it. Eitan, you want to take a crack at that? What's wrong with that?
Yeah, so the poor person might not, I guess, feel like when he sees this person again, he'll feel bad that he took money from him. Like, he won't feel comfortable around this person.
But that person doesn't know that the Ani is being supported by him. Yeah, Ariel wrote here on the chat that the Ani may be embarrassed when encountering the giver in public, meaning that what other people might see. Like Ariel, is that the idea? Oh, that he knows that he's supporting him. So similar to what Eitan just said. That there's just something that it's, you know, you might be embarrassed when you know that this guy is supporting you. Eitan, is that the idea?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very high level of concern. So the thought is, if I know that I'm getting supported by some person, even if he has no idea, that's still a non-ideal type of tzedakah, correct? So the Ani knows that the Nosein does not know that he's the recipient, and yet we think there's an element of busha there. Is that what you want to say, Eitan?
Yeah, for the recipient.
And what's the busha? Just the mere fact that he's being supported by someone?
Mm-hmm.
Even though he knows that the supporter has no idea that he's supporting him.
Yeah, I feel like someone who has to be supported is not like 100% confident in life, or let's say little embarrassed that he needs to ask for money from other people.
Well, he's not asking money from anybody. He's getting supported just by pulling money out of the knapsack, right?
Yeah, so I feel like making your own money, people feel better to make your own money as opposed to having to take from other people.
But remember, we're not contrasting this with somebody making their own money. The question is a system of tzedakah where the nosein doesn't know the mekabel and the mekabel doesn't know the nosein. The mekabel, the ani knows that he's being supported in any event, even on the highest level of tzedakah. He just doesn't know who the supporter is. No?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anybody have thoughts on this? Josh?
Yeah, I don't know if it's about like busha per se. I think it's just you feel bad. Like if an anonymous person gives you money, then okay, you have money. But when you know that you're taking that you're getting money from someone else, you feel bad that because of you, they're losing money. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose it makes it a little more personal in a sense, right? It's like this guy is the one who's supporting me. So you feel maybe
I think more that like I took money away from this person, like money that maybe really should be his.
Even though in any event you're taking money away from a person, you just don't know the token. I just want to. My point here is really just to say that this seems to be a very high level of concern about the dignity of the person. Right, it's so far removed from some actual sense of embarrassment that he would suffer, like going white in the face type experience. Right, but I think we could agree that there's something more dignified about the thing being anonymous, that there's no sense of dependency on any particular person. Yes. Okay, let's look at these midrashim here that point to another level of tzedakah, also about how tzedakah should be given. And here, it's not about removing the sense of dependency by anonymizing the giver and the receiver, but rather through disguising tzedakah into something else. Right? So it doesn't come off as here's support for you. It comes off as a different type of transaction. So anybody see the Sifrei and the Medrash Tanoim about Pasoach Tiftach? Ned, tell us about it.
You basically can make it look like you're giving it as a loan.
Exactly. You shouldn't give it tzedakah as charity. You should give it to the guy as a loan. Right, which most people are fine borrowing money, but what should he do next? So read the Sifrei for us. Pasach
Tiftach.
Yeah, so if you see that the Ani is a Baishan, meaning that he'd be embarrassed to take tzedakah, so you should get him money not through tzedakah. How should you present it to him?
Present it to him as a loan.
Exactly, present it to him as a loan. And then if you look at the Yushalmi's version of this, the Yushalmi says, Ketzad Haya Rabbi Yonah Osa.
Shai Roe Ben Tugem, Shiyad Ben Chasev, Haya Omer Lo Beni, Bishvil Shishimati Shinaflach, Lach Yerusha Makam Acher, Tol Be'at Perea, Mindahavanas of Le Amr Le Matana.
Yeah, so when you see this guy, you say, look, I know you're going to get a Yerusha at some point, or you're already entitled to Yerusha and you'll be able to pay me back. Take a loan. And then after the loan is already given, what do you say?
Then you can have it as a gift.
Exactly. Then you're mochel on the payback of the loan. That's a much more dignified way of giving tzedakah to somebody who doesn't want to be supported by other people's charity. Somebody see this? So here you have it, this notion of protecting the dignity of the ani, not from the perspective of anonymizing the nosein and anonymizing the mekabel, but from the perspective of masking tzedakah as a loan and then waiving the loan when the payback time comes. Comments on this, Nistan? Yeah.
How is this not like shekir?
What do you mean?
How is this like? You have no intention of getting it as a loan.
Um, So you're worried about lying?
Yeah.
Don't you know the crazy comment that I quoted earlier in the year, right? That check errs only that which leads to bad results. And MS is that which leads... No, I'm just joking. That was really an indefensible position.
The Shu Rama that says that Shalom kin docha vidor sheker tircha.
That's right. Maybe like Shalom bias type concern. It's an interesting point, but certainly it seems to be permissible in this context, right, Ned? However you want to square it. Anybody else worried about the sheker component? Josh is not worried about it. Josh, tell us why you're not worried.
Oh, a little white lies to make the guy feel better never hurt anybody.
There you go. There you go. Now, I just want to point out that summary shown him, we spoke about the Kupa component. Summary Shonim think that the virtue of having a kupa tzedakah of the town, where you eliminate the no-sein giving directly to the mekabel and the mekabel receiving to the no-sein, is good precisely because it captures this notion of kavod, of dignity in the giving of tzedakah. The Radvaz in a tshuva in Chilek Chesim and Kufayin Beis has a version of this. We'll see the Rambam also has a version of this. And he says... He was asked about the best way to give tzedakah, whether it's better to do it through a kupa or whether he should give it out individually to the aniyim who come to his door. And the Radvaz paskins if it were the case that the aniyim would have to go door to door to ask for tzedakah, Nimtzu atznua mason barav, people will be deterred from asking tzedakah because they'll be embarrassed to go door to door. V'lechein tiknu kupa v'tamchui k'dei sheyisparnasu kulam biyachad bikavod. The Chazal instituted this notion of a kupa so that the aniyim could be supported in a dignified manner. Now here I just want to point out, it's not clear to me if the Radvaz is saying that the significance of supporting the ani bekavod is just instrumental so that what? Josh?
It's just so that we can make sure that they all are going to get food.
Exactly. You could say that this kavod and busha component for the Radvaz is just instrumental to make sure that the aniyim who need staka end up getting staka and no one's dying because they're too embarrassed to ask. But the way I would read it, and maybe this is what the Rambam's saying in his different Milos of Tzedakah, is that the institution of the Kupa is intrinsically better because being Mefarnes Aniyim Bekavod intrinsically realizes the goal of Tzedakah more than these other forms, right? By giving Tzedakah in a manner that's dignified for the Aniyim, okay? Everybody see that? Meaning another way of putting my point is that it would be self-defeating if tzedakah is about giving the ani a dignified way of living or a sense of self-respect. Tzedakah itself could be self-defeating because the more you give him material goods, the more you undercut his sense of self-respect and dignity by making him dependent on the largesse of others. Okay? Josh, good? Yeah. So let's look at the this idea that the Rambam develops, that the Kupa was instituted for this reason. So we have the Mishnah in Shkal and Perkei Mishnah Vav about the Lishchas Chashayim. So volunteer to tell us about the Shkalim Hevav, Lishkas Chashayim, what was this office in the Mikdash? Kobe, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, you want me to just read it?
Tell us about it and then read it.
Okay, so there was like in the Beit HaMikdash, there were like these two rooms. One was called the Lishkat Chashayim, one the Lishkat Kalim. And the Lishkat Chashayim was basically a way for like people to like anonymously give tzedakah and anonymously and for people to anonymously take tzedakah.
Exactly.
Lishkat Chashayim, Yirechet, not ni Latoka Bechashai, Vaniyim Bnei Tovim, Yuhanasim Natoka Bechashai, right? Like, good people would like put stuff in, like people feed it, and Nimenitom would come and take from it. And Geshem Shaitalishka Kashayim.
Is the Tosafta in the second paragraph of Shkalim adds to this that it wasn't just the base of Mikdash.
Geshem Shaitalishka Kashayim Mikdash Kakaita Bechol Yevi'ir Vinesha Nimenitom Manisim Mitoka Bechashai. Right?
Exactly.
Clearly, in all cities, they also had something like this.
So there was this institution of a Lishchas Hashem in every city, which is basically like a Kupas Tzedakah, correct? Right, Kobe? It's a place where you're getting money, and it's all traded hands anonymously. It trades possessions, transfers possessions anonymously. If you look here at the Rambam in his eight levels of Tzedakah and Manas Ani and Perek Yud, the Rambam says, here, Parakit Alachachas. So read this for me, Kobi.
Oh, let me say, I know it's not a name below Yada Lemi Naton, below Yada Animi Lakach, Shazem, Mitzvah Shema, Gon Lishkach Hashayim, Shaita B'Mikdash.
Okay, so the Rambam gives Lishchas Hashayim as an example of anonymous giving, anonymous receiving. And what does he analogize it to, Kobe?
So, what do you mean?
So
like a mitzvah lishma, you're saying?
No, I don't care about that for now.
Oh, but Karl is noting the talk kubah shel tzedakah. Look, it's like the same as putting to having like a kubah of tzedakah that everyone just puts money into and like people just take money out of.
Exactly. So the Rambam draws this explicit analogy between the Tosafta and the Mishnah's idea of Lishchas Hashem in the Beis Hamikdash with the more contemporary institution of a kubah shel tzedakah, right? To embody this virtue of anonymity on both sides. Great. Okay, so now let's look at the eight virtues of tzedakah that the Rambam gives, and I want to understand why are they ordered in this way, like from what makes the most virtuous, and what makes the least virtuous. So let's start. Let's take a volunteer who prepared the Rambam well. Ned.
Shimon amalu tish b'tzedakah, zol amalu mizo. Ma'ala gedola she'in l'malei mena, zeh ha'machzik b'yad Yisrael.
Shemach.
Shemach v'notin lo.
Like yamoch achicha?
Yeah. Shemach v'notin lo matana, o halaba, o osimo shutvut, o mamsi lo mach. Ki lechazik et yado, ad shele yitztarech l'vriot l'shol. The highest level is providing somebody with a job or finding him some sort of venture to work in.
Odd. So not just that, more than that even.
So that he just becomes independent, financially independent.
More than that even, though. But good, just go on for a second. Val Zenemar.
Zenemar v'chazak to bo ger v'toshav v'chayimach klomar v'chazak bo ad shelo yipol v'yisarech.
Yeah, so you're right, Ned, that this is giving them a job. So, but even more than that, what else defines it? It's, doctors would say, it's prophylactic, right? Or it's preventative.
Uh-huh.
Right? The whole point is, ad shelo yitzarech lebrios lishol, you're nipping it in the bud. You see that his financial situation is about to change, and you step in and stop him from even becoming an ani. Right? You enter into business with him, you give an ad shelo yipol v'yitzarech. Right? Correct? Now, this is interesting because, you know, Ned, you yourself are always worried about somebody being Mekayim in the midst of tzedakah. So you could say, oh, wait till he becomes poor and then I'll be Mekayim in the midst of tzedakah. And, you know,
yeah, because this is the midst of tzedakah.
Oh, yeah, so the Rambam didn't in the midst of tzedakah. But the Rambam here seems to be saying, look, it's better to make sure that nobody falls than to support somebody who has fallen. Correct?
Yeah.
So what do you make of this? What do you make of this this statement?
If the concern here is that being in a state of where you need other people to provide for you, then and tzedakah is about sort of addressing that situation, then better not be in that situation at all.
Right. I mean, it's better to make somebody non-dependent in the first place than to support them in their dependency. That's one way of putting it, right? Yeah, I think that's consistent with this. If you think that self-respect and dignity is, you know, dependent upon non-dependency, then I think that's totally true. What do you guys think of this being tzedakah? Like, what is tzedakah about this? Strictly speaking, the guy doesn't really have needs yet, right? Ad shelo yitzarech. Your ad shelo yipal v'yitzarech. I think isn't there a bit of a paradox here about how this can be tzedakah? No? Is there de machsoro yet even? Ad shelo yipol v'yitzarech.
Well, if he's already in a lower financial state, then there might be some element of that also.
Maybe. I guess we have to know what shemach actually means here, right? What are his needs at this point? But I want to say a chiddush here, unrelated to the main theme of this year today, but related to a broader theme, that takes tzedakah out of the category of satisfying people's needs or providing them with the needs that they're missing. What can we say about this notion of tzedakah? What might this expand tzedakah to, Josh?
Trying to prevent people from feeling pain, I would say.
Okay, so there is a dimension. Yeah, maybe preventing people from feeling pain. That's right. Shmuel?
I mean, could this be that source that sort of we're looking for to say that there doesn't have to be sort of a financial exchange? Maybe it is just sort of helping him psychologically, helping him.
Oh, Shmuel, you're hoisting yourself on your own petard. You're saying maybe this is an example of like Mephiso, the equivalent of Mephiso Bidvarim type thing.
Right.
It's interesting. Because there's no real tzedakah even being done here, yet it's tzedakah. Yeah, it's very sharp. I need to think about that a little more. Because you are doing something on the one hand, right? So I want to think about that. But here's a way of thinking about this intuitively. If I am the Treasury Secretary, right, or the Chairman of the Fed, and I'm trying to figure out interest rates and unemployment and all those things. Right? You're trying to set up the economy in a way that will give people jobs or preserve jobs. Is that a form of tzedakah on this reading? Daniel?
I think so, yeah.
Not only is it a form of tzedakah, it's the highest form of tzedakah. It's setting up the economy in a way that gives people the jobs they need to support themselves, right? That's like the highest form of tzedakah, according to this formulation in the Rambam, correct? There's more to say about this, but I just want to note that you could think of tzedakah in two ways. You could think of tzedakah along the lines of charity. That's fine, right? That's someone's in need, they need help, you're helping them out. You could even go further than that and think of tzedakah along the lines that we have been thinking about it for the last few weeks, which is, oh, tzedakah is a duty to assist the poor, right? It's a duty of justice, let's say, kofin oso, it's the right of the ani, et cetera, right? That's, you can even push further in that direction. I think this formulation of the Rambam goes even further and contextualizes tzedakah as a type of, what you might just say is like a broader distributive justice principle, which is to make sure that the economy is set up in a way that people can meet their needs through the economy that we're providing for them. Does anybody see that? It catapults tzedakah out of the realm of assistance, well, social welfare systems. And you're saying just like setting up the economy in the right way to give people the jobs they need. That's the highest level of tzedakah. And then just assisting people when they're in need, that's really just an inferior form of tzedakah when the economy doesn't work in the right way. Ariel, you have a thought on this?
Yeah, maybe just to push back, I guess. When I read the Rambam initially, the words "kedei l'chazik et yado ad shelo yitzarech," could that be read as the fact that it's just taking somebody who needed tzedakah and bring them to a level where they're like totally on stable footing at this point, and not that it's preventative?
Right, that's how Ned read it initially, I think. Correct, Ned? That was your first reading. So I want to push back on your pushback in two ways. Well, I'll push back in one way. I think this line, "V'alzeh nemar v'chzakta bo, hachzeik bo ad shelo yipal v'yitzdarech," that line is what I'm being medayik in, and which sounds to my mind as being preventative, right? Be mechazek his hand so that he won't even fall and be in need. Agree with that, Diak, Ariel?
Yeah, but could it be read as that he won't fall again, like hope he's stable from here on out? Like, I could understand this, the whole idea of ger v'tosha v'chaimecha, but I guess in the context of tzedakah, can we read this as being lifting somebody up who had already fallen?
I don't think it's such an elegant reading of that line. What do you guys think? Anybody else have thoughts on whether you could read ad shelo yipol? To my mind, that means that get him before he falls down. Correct? Kobe, what do you think?
I think that sounds, it sounds like it's like preventative.
Yeah, correct. Correct. Meaning you could have gas stations that fix people's tires when they go flat. Or you could have a system that requires people to have puncture-proof tires, right? And here we're saying that real tzedakah is to set up the system with puncture-proof tires. Right, Ariel? That's how I read that second line. Anybody else feel strongly about the Diak and the Rambam? Benji, do you feel strongly about it? Looks like Benji might be out. Benji?
Yeah.
Feel strongly about the second reading in the Rambam, second line in the Rambam?
Yeah. You think that tzedakah can be preventative as well?
Yeah, that it is preventative in this case.
Right. Yeah, it sounds plausible.
Okay, great. Let's look at the Rambam's so the next Maila in Halacha Ches is the different levels of, double anonymity, double blind. Right, giving tzedakah in a double blind way. The Nosein doesn't know to whom he's giving. The Mekabel doesn't know from whom he's receiving. We saw that in our Gemara. I think it's a little strange that the Rambam characterizes this as a mitzvah lishma. Why? Like, why is the Rambam emphasizing a lishma component here? So there's a bit of a puzzle why the Rambam throws that in. But tell me what you think about this halacha tes and halacha yud. So how does the Rambam draw the hierarchy between the one level of anonymity? So Daniel, take us to these three Rambams. Pachas Mizah,
Shiyada HaNotin L'mi Yitin, V'lo Yada HaAni M'mi Laka, right? So level lower is that when the Notin knows to who he gave, but the Ani doesn't know from who he took.
Right, so I think that's intuitive. So the thought here is that there's some level of embarrassment if the Ani knows that somebody knows that he needs to be supported, correct?
Yeah.
And Halacha Yud tells us what, Daniel?
Halacha Mizeh, Shiyada Ani Mimina Tavliga Da Noti, where the Ani knows that the Kivri doesn't.
Right. Okay, so how would you describe the difference between Halacha Tes and Halacha Yud? Why is Halacha Yud a lower level?
Because there is still... because I guess from the perception of the Ani is a certain greater element of Busha when he knows that someone gave it to him.
Exactly. Exactly. I think the hierarchy between Tes and Yud is explained by the fact that in Halacha Yud there's Busha, whereas in Halacha Tes there's no Busha. Correct? There's only Busha when the Ani knows that somebody knows that they're supporting him. But if he just knows who's supporting him, but the supporter doesn't know, then there's no Busha in that case. I think that's the Rambam's perspective. Why then is there any Maila in not knowing to whom you're giving? Why do you think there's any Maila? it could be that the Rambam actually just thinks that it's about how lishma you're acting, which is nothing to do with the hilchos tzedakah dimension. It's just that the state of mind of the giver is pure when he doesn't even know where his tzedakah is going to, as opposed to him thinking in his mind, oh, taka, I'm supporting that guy. Maybe he gets some sense of satisfaction out of giving. So my idea is just that if you read the Rambam carefully, halacha tes, the hierarchy between halacha tes and halacha yud is defined by that in one case there's busha, in one case there's no busha. The reason for the Rambam why there's a mila to not know to whom you're giving has nothing to do with busha. It has to do with this idea of lishma. That it's considered pure intention if you don't even get the sense of satisfaction that I'm supporting that person. Does everybody agree with that, Diak? Thoughts on the Diak? Daniel, what do you think of the Diak?
Yeah, it makes sense.
It makes sense? Yeah, thumbs up. Okay, Shmuel, you like the Diak?
Yeah, if we're making the argument that this sort of psychological idea is a part of Hilchot Tzedakah, why wouldn't we make the argument that this Lishma idea is also like intrinsic to Hilchot Tzedakah?
Because I haven't seen it resonate anywhere else yet within Tzedakah. The Bizoyon Ani, Kavod Ani thing is everywhere in Hilchot Tzedakah. It's like you can't look at a din without that looking back at you in the face. The Lishma thing, I'm trying to figure out why the Rambam felt the need to insert it here. I don't have a good theory yet, right? So to my mind, it just sounds other. I'm saying it's more lishma in general is a good principle, but I don't think it's intrinsic to Hilchos Tzedakah in any way. Yeah. Okay, but stay tuned. I'll get back to you on that. Ed, you have a hand?
Yeah, I just sent the Radbaz to the chat that goes to Kanim, that I think the Radbaz is using it to support your reading of the Rambam. That it's
Al Tanichenu Sheyored.
Yeah.
Halamazadom Elamaso Yishal Gabechamor. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the Radvaz is reading on the Rambam here. So let me add it right after here. Supports my reading, right? That it's prophylactic. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. Which means that tzedakah extends to setting up the economy in the right way. Right, Ned?
Yes.
Yeah, great. Okay, so then we have the other levels of tzedakah. Halacha Yud Aleph. Daniel, take us through that. What's the next level?
Right.
Yeah, and that's supposed to contrast with Halacha Yud Beis, which is what?
Correct.
So why do you think it's better to give an ani before he asks as opposed to after he asks?
Because asking is a little degrading.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So here again, it seems to be that the bizayon component plays a role. Are we all in agreement about? I mean, you could have said, it's not obvious. I mean, you could have just said that the mila here is defined by, it's always zrizim makdim la mitzvah, right? Or zrizus is always a virtue in doing a mitzvah. We'll have to see what the mefarshim say here. But I think you're right, Daniel, that this is also bizayon and busha motivated. What's the last madrega here?
It's giving less than what is needed, but doing it like one is b'sever panim yafod, like I guess in a good manner.
Correct.
Whereas one is like begrudgingly.
Correct. And what's the right? The lowest level is sheyitein lo be'etzev. Correct.
Like yeah.
To give it in a sad way, right? That's the lowest level of tzedakah. Now, just getting back to Shmuel's point, if tzedakah is about the actual support. Financial means, it's very difficult to say Yitein lo be'etzev is the lowest form of tzedakah. As long as the ani gets the check, who cares? Are we in agreement about that? If tzedakah is really about just providing him with the material goods, I think it's only once you appreciate that it's not just the material goods, it's about ensuring the status of the ani and his kavod and his self-respect over his dignity overall, then you can make sense why the lowest level of tzedakah is to give it to him in this disgraceful way, right? You make him have to beg for it. Okay. So we all in agreement about the role that Busha and Bizayon plays in Stockholm, that it seems to loom large in this whole discussion of how stock is given. Give me a thumbs up if you agree with that. Okay, good. Ezra Muscat? Okay, good. We don't know about Roni because Roni is blanked out his screen, but we'll find out. Roni, have
I'm
you?
Giving a, I'm giving a thumbs up.
Great, great.
It's a bad hair day today.
So hats were invented. No? That's really why hats were invented. If you lived in Europe and you didn't have like showers and shampoo, so you put on a black hat before you walked outside. No? It's my chiddush. But I think it's pashut pshat. That's why people wear hats on Shabbos. No one's as excited by my mahalach as I am.
Are we inferring something about the hygiene of the various Jewish communities in the Jewish world these days?
No, right. Fine. I'll take back my speculation. But I like the direction they are taking it, Shmuel. Okay, so let me say a little more about this, about the Rambam's different madrigos. So if you look at the Sifra, the Radvaz that Ned quoted comes from the Sifra in Behar. The idea that part of tzedaka is to make sure that the guy doesn't get poor at all. Halamaza doma lamaso yagabe chamor odena bimkomo echa tofes bo umamido. Nafa la'aretz chamisha ein mamidimoso. Okay. Now, the Sifra, this is what the Radvaz quotes as the source for the Rambam's idea that it's the highest mila of tzedakah to stop the guy before he becomes poor. And the Radvaz and the Sifra give the example of a camel that's struggling with its load. It's easier to keep the load on the camel than it is to pick it off the ground and put it back on. Yes? Correct?
Donkey, yeah.
Sorry, donkey. But I'm sure the same thing would happen with a camel as well. So it's true. So the Rambam could be working off here. And I think that does support my reading of the Rambam. But there's another way to read this Torah's Kohanim. That this is not about expanding tzedakah to the realm of the economy, or about this is the most dignified way of giving tzedakah. What might this Torah's Kohanim just be about?
Like utility? Like
exactly.
The best utilitarian solution?
Yeah, it's the most efficient, right? Exactly. It's the cheapest way of doing tzedakah. Because, if you create the job system in this way, it keeps the whole economy going smoothly, et cetera, et cetera. As opposed to when it's financial support, then it's much more of a drain on the economy, or it's a drain on other people's resources. So actually the language of Torah's Kohanim is very elegant. If you want to take it in a efficiency direction, because if the point is it's just harder to put somebody back once they're down than it is to keep them standing. Somebody says, I think Benji, you're totally right about that. Possible suggestion. Okay. Did anybody have thoughts on the Meiri's list of his hierarchy? Anybody thought there are a few differences between the Meiri's list and the Rambam's list? Anybody think that they were particularly illustrative? No, pretty much the same as the Rambam. Benji, you have a thought on that?
Yeah, the Meiri in the end says that if he does it in a way that is meant to embarrass him, that it still is considered tzedakah, right? Yeah. Kedei bahu bizayon lenotanam lemekabel. Whereas the Rambam, I guess doesn't list that. He could be that he doesn't he thinks that's usur, whereas the Meiri still thinks it's
that's the Rambam did have this. I thought the Rambam did have this. Panim Zoamos is Kedai Ba Bizayon with no sein ul makabel, so it's embarrassing. The Rambam did have a version of that because that was the Rambam's last thing. Oh, she eating a little bit etzev. I think that's the same idea. Giving him like, you know, fine, I'll give it to you. Like giving it to him.
But not in like dafka way that is meant to embarrass him.
Yeah, I hear that.
I thought that there was a difference there. It could be that it's the same.
No, you're right. That the Panim Zoamos is a little more fierce than the Rambam's Be'etzev, right? It sounds almost like you give it to him angrily. And he's explicitly explains that in terms of Kedai Bizayon. It's interesting that he thinks it's Bizayon to the Nosein. You know, like when like the Nosein is embarrassing himself by not giving Tzedaka Panim Yafos. Yeah, I think it's interesting, Diak. But more or less, I think the Meiri, he does have a little bit of a difference. But more or less, his outline is similar to the Rambam's. Yeah. Let's see. Good. Now, I just want to draw your attention to two comments in the Rishonim here before we conclude. So the first is the Radvaz and Ma'anasaniyim Yud Yud. So the Radvaz says, Pachos mizeh sheyeda ha'ani miminotel, shehare ha'ani misbayesh. So why is it bad for the ani to know from whom he's receiving if the nosein doesn't know to whom he's giving? So what's the Meiri's reason? What's the Radvaz's explanation for the Rambam? He thinks there's busha in the act of taking tzedakah. So it's not so clear to me why there should be busha here. If the nosein doesn't know who's receiving. Anybody have a thought on this? This is what we were trying to figure out earlier. What's wrong with the case where the Ani knows who he's getting from, but the nosein does not know who the Ani is? So the Radvaz thinks that, again, it's translatable in terms of busha. It's not clear if it's in the act of taking the tzedakah or if it's the fact that maybe the guy could turn around. But Shmuel, you see how this is an example where the idea of misbayesh is everywhere in tzedakah, right? It looms large, whereas this lishma component is much more muted. And then you have the Mari Korkis also has an interesting comment here on the Rambam. And he says the following. He says, on that same issue, Kisha Mekabel Yodea, Hafilu She'en HaNosein Yodea, Mikol Mokam HaMekabel Misbayesh, Kisha Roa Es HaNosein Umitztaer. So he's just making a psychological statement that even if the Nosein doesn't know who the Mekabel is, there is some Tsar and Busha to the recipient, Mikol Makom. Does everybody see that? So what exactly the psychological factor is that draws that busha is a bit of a mystery still to me, but they want to explain all these dinim in the Rambam based on that busha and bizayon component. Okay, and then the last comment here is Paraget Alachid Gimel the Mari Korkis. The Mari Korkis explains Pachos mizeh sheyitein pachos min aroi besever panim yafos. Why is Nosein B'Sever Panim Yafos a good madriga still? Kivan Shehu B'Sever Panim Yafos Afilu Shehu Pachos Min Aroi Ein Ha'ani Misbayesh Kol Kach V'Hu Yoser Tov Me HaNosein Karoi B'Panim Atzuvos Ki Ha'ani Misbayesh U'Mitztaer. So here again, you have an explicit formulation in the Mari Korkis that the last two levels are determined by the level of busha for the ani. Which again, Shmuel, we haven't seen an explicit makor that addresses your concern, right? Not giving at all, but mefayis bedvarim. But the Mari Korkis at least wants to go on the record that sefer panim yafos is better because there's no busha, than giving Bipanamatsuvos because of the Busha and the Tsar of the Ani. Okay. Thoughts, comments on this survey of the role that Busha plays, Benji?
Could it be that, like, knowing who the Notain is, like, embarrassing because, like, you view it as, like, a hierarchy? Like, now that he's the Notain and, you know, I'm the Makabel, that means that he's, like, better than me in some sense. Whereas if you didn't know who the Notain is, you can, like, kind of delude yourself into thinking, like, well, everyone has to take tzedakah and there's only, like, one super ashir. But, like, me and all these people are all equivalent. And then once you, like, have to rank yourself, once you, like, put yourself within this ranking system, that's, like, embarrassing.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I mean, now you are ranked against somebody else. Like, he's the Notain, I'm the Makabel. I'm dependent on him, and that's the bad thing.
As right. opposed, it's like, oh, I thought I was level 5, but it turns out I'm level 4 or level
yeah, 8. That's interesting. As opposed to where just the system of the Kupa Satstaka supports everyone. Yeah, so I'm supported by the Kupa, right, which is very different. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. So you're saying it's something about the notion of social class or dependency that, yeah, I like that suggestion. We're going to come back to that in the next year. So guys, for next year, I want us to discuss the next topic, Aniyei Ircha Kodmin and hierarchies about to whom a Notain Tzedakah should be giving. Okay? Any last thoughts on are you guys convinced about the centrality of the dignity of the Ani in the method of giving tzedakah? More or less? Okay. So let's move on next year to the Ani Ircha Kodmin. We'll be in person 1 o'clock in the shiur room. All right? Shkayach, guys. See you all tomorrow.
Thank you.